Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This hour is brought to you by Horizon Therapeutics, going to incredible lengths every day.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
David Montgomery struggled with early in his career. There's a lot of dancing in the backfield. He's gotten more and more effective throughout his time with the Bears at getting downhill.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big and Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on the Score.
Anthony Herron is brought to you by global biotech company Horizon Therapeutics, where their mission to transform patients' lives is personal. Big Ant Herron on Twitter. He joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book on Twitch. It is twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Anthony, that's I won't even call it a heat check because there wasn't a lot of heat. It was a reality check, I think, for us who realize that the Bears are bad.
You talk like we didn't know that three months ago.
I know that, but this is that's what this game did. Was it reset everyone's like, "Oh, bad."
Yeah.
That's what bad looks like.
Yes. They are going to be there. They currently are and are going to continue to be bad. What this Bears season is going to be about and why. I'm clinging to the fact that I've at least heard the word, as I've been talking to you guys about, hearing the leadership, hearing the brass talk about development. That's going to be key moving forward with this thing, because for this season, any broader big picture goals were going to be a big shock if anything from a team perspective was going to be attainable for the Bears that looked impressive by the end of it. It's nice to get off to a 2-1 start. Had every opportunity to be 3-1 coming out of yesterday. That still should have kept a very sharp focus, a very firm lens of what the Bears legitimately are from a roster perspective this season. They don't have the compilation of talent to truly compete over the long haul of an NFL season with any of the best teams in the NFC. So from that perspective, where are the Bears at right now? They're really not very different than many of us anticipated they would be.
Let's tap into you as a defensive player. What's the worst that you've been beat by misdirection, and did it happen like 18 times in a game like it did to the Bears yesterday?
Yeah, the issue, one thing with misdirection, it's how concerned are you with where your eyes are initially drawn? The eye discipline of a defense can get tested, like talking to you guys coming out of the Green Bay game, how a wizard as a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers can test your eye discipline because you think he, as the signal caller, he can put the football wherever he wants it and it can end up in an advantageous situation for the opposing offense. And so your eyes go there, your body goes there, you overreact to it, and then you end up out of position as a defender because now you're late to the tackle or your angle of pursuit is off in pursuing the football where it actually ends up declaring. What a Saquon Barkley ends up doing to that is, one, your run defense is already porous going into the matchup, and Barkley begins to gash you over and over and over, and he is like a blur, a massive blur, just running by you over and over again. And so now not only the defensive front isn't getting off blocks and they're reaching, but then the second and third level of the defense is like, man, not only is he like 30 pounds heavier than me, but he's also going to outrun me if I don't get there. And so you just overreact to it over and over again. I was tweeting about it during the game, and I usually don't even spend a lot of time on Twitter during the Bears game, but Jaquan Brisker, what the position he was in, because there was a lot of times where they went with that multi-tight end set to have the true wide tight end and then another wing tight end there on the end of the line of scrimmage. And so it was putting Jaquan Brisker not only as the force-contained player, but pretty frequently he was the edge of the Bears' defense towards the line of scrimmage, but also having an additional blocking surface outside of him, which as a safety, he's frankly just not that accustomed to. Not a position he's been in very much. And so as you see Saquon Barkley and see the action going away, I was talking about this on Bears Post Game Live. I was displaying it for Luke Nellis and Jim Miller, where his shoulders would turn throughout the first half, and he was starting to get into chase mode to try and pursue Saquon Barkley. And then next thing you know, here's Daniel Jones, who, as you guys know, is a guy who can move pretty well for a quarterback of his size, and you're not even paying attention to him. It certainly looked game plan-wise like Alan Williams, Matt Eberflus, they said, man, we got to get bodies to Saquon Barkley because he's going to make the first two or three miss, and then the next two or three aren't going to be able to wrap their arms around those giant thighs of his, and then the next thing you know, he's going to have all kinds of yards after initial contact. And they reacted so viscerally, so immediately to Saquon Barkley, and they really didn't adjust in a timely manner.
I appreciate Matt Adams more than I think I should.
Oh.
Because he's better than the whoever, is it Joe Thomas or whoever it is? Like,
it is just Joe Thomas.
Yeah. And I didn't think that there'd be that big a difference between two people I've never heard of. but so be it, right?
So they got the one initial guy who's not great, but then some other guy you haven't heard of who's not great comes in for him. It's like, wow, even though that one I don't think is great, but then the other one is even less not great.
If they both walked in here right now and they said one of us is Matt Adams and one of us is Joe Thomas, like, I don't know. You guys decide.
Right.
You can be whoever you want because I have no idea.
It becomes a problem, and frankly, that's just that's a lot of the defenders on the field for the Bears. There's a lot of just kind of try hard guys who've been around the block in the National Football League to limited extent up to this point. You know, a lot of Anthony Heron caliber guys on the field for the Bears right now.
You don't have to do that.
I'm being real here, though. Like, you know, it's one thing for the defense we've seen in recent seasons with the depth of the resumes that have been there, with the Pro Bowls that have been there, with the level of play that they were capable of, that the potential was for. And then now you see this year's crew. And as much as, yes, they expend multiple early draft picks on the secondary, and then you also have the resume of Eddie Jackson that was already there, and of Jalen Johnson, what we've seen building there, but Jalen Johnson isn't even out there and available. But the first two levels, you got Roquan, and you kind of got, you know, some guys. You're not getting the elite version of Robert Quinn even that's there, and a lot of the rest of it is developmental and prove it guys right now, and especially that defensive front. I started telling you guys towards the end of the preseason that D-line is going to be a concern throughout the year because, yes, there's a couple of prospects who you kind of wonder if something can develop from a Dominique Robinson, but there's nothing you can really count on. There's nothing dependable up front on defense, and when you're porous up front, then the linebackers struggle for it. The secondary ends up suffering for it as well, both versus the pass and with their run fits. Even like Eddie Jackson, who's screaming from the third level, one misfit there, and then Saquon Barkley's out the gate. That happened a couple of times, and what on the whole was another quality game from Eddie Jackson, but the entire defense ends up suffering from this domino effect of the Bears' defensive line not performing at a high level.
What's your progress report on Justin Fields from yesterday?
Well, I use the word methodical, you know, a few times here lately just in describing his process and his mechanics. And I think that the development is kind of methodical, too. And what we're what it seems like we're starting to run into, and it's not in its sort of final version here, and it doesn't mean that this is where Justin Fields ends up, but we're seeing moments where, in my opinion, like the ball into the flat, like early in the game, I think it was maybe the second or third series, they're in the red zone, and they run a quick boot action into the boundary, and he's got Cole Kmet available to him in the flat. But Cole Kmet has dropped more passes than he's caught this season. And so, I mean, you know, it seemed like Justin Fields, he obviously saw him. That's his first and, to some degree, perhaps only read available to him on that play. He decided, you know what, I'm one-on-one with a defender in space. I'm not sure if I can really get it over this guy's head because some of my passes are getting tipped at the line of scrimmage. And frankly, I don't know, going towards the sideline, what's Cole going to do with it, really, if I throw it to him out there? So he decided it was a better idea just to keep the football. You don't want Justin Fields to get to that point. And it's not easy because he's the one out there going through it to allow that to be something that creeps into his head, where not only just the pass rush and whatever pressure may come from that, but you don't want him to be in a situation where whatever lost faith could be there in playmakers. Like there was another pass. I actually put an image of it on Twitter during the game where it looked like you saw Dante Pettis beginning to come on an in cut on a route where Justin Fields' first read seemed to be to the field side. And the second read, it looked to me, just from the angle they gave us on the television copy from kind of the sky cam look, that he looked at Dante Pettis for a moment. He was beginning the in cut, but he hadn't separated from the defender. He's Dante Pettis. Dante Pettis hasn't really shown a lot of separation. I love watching him in college. He's an excellent collegiate receiver in the NFL. He hasn't shown himself to be a guy that consistently creates separation. He was still kind of tangled up with the defensive back beginning his in cut. Justin Fields looked at it for a moment, decided, yeah, I'd rather not throw it there. I'm going to tuck it and run it. Now, I do think game plan seemed to me to be a part of that going into it, because you're facing this Wink Martindale defense, so much of the man coverage from the Giants. And so when backs are turned, my impression is Luke Getsy, I'm sure the media will probably ask him a little bit about it when they get to talk to him this week, was that part of the game plan? Because in my opinion, it was the most decisive as a runner that I think we've seen Justin Fields to this early portion of his Bears career. I believe that was likely part of the game plan going in because of the defensive schemes that are there. You're going to see some blitz. You're going to see man coverage. You're going to have opportunities to move the chains with your legs. And it looked like that was part of the plan going in, was that he did that. Go through some quick progressions and don't sort of hesitate. If you're not sure what you're looking at, then just go move the chains.
This is going to sound like an X and O question. And we do a lot of that, and we answer a lot of those questions, but I don't mean it that way. But my question to you, when a coach is cleaves to something like the hits principle, and when it's essential to his being and it permeates everything about the defense of hustle, 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 get to where you've got to go, does that make you more susceptible to the sleight of hand? Does it make you more susceptible to the tricks of shoot your gap, go, 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 react? And does Brian Daboll and whoever just say, all right, fine, you're gonna be so intense? if the talent level is lower, they're like, okay, you go ahead and hustle because you're gonna turn around and the ball's gonna be over here.
I think that's part of what you got to there late is a key element of it. When the talent level is lower matters in that, because to be able to coach to expect hustle and intensity, there's an element in there that's also communicated within it, I'm sure, that involves focus and technique and essentially doing your job. You know, one of those things where you hear kind of the cliche of doing your 111th, where for Jaquan Brisker, you know, I was referencing just how, as the edge of the Bears defense, the mistake he was making was to immediately turn his shoulders and sort of crash down towards the stretch play action going away from him, when the second half, once the adjustment was made and they had him out on the edge still in half number two, it was shoulder square, and then don't chase the ball away. As soon as you recognize that the quarterback has the ball, at least delay for a moment, and now go sick him. He ends up knocking Daniel Jones out of the game in doing that, but it's about Jaquan Brisker recognizing that the hustle, the intensity, isn't just about running all over the place, you know, like a chicken with his head cut off. It's about having the intensity of focus and recognizing what your responsibility is. And I do think they changed his alignment and I think refined his assignment a little bit. So I don't think it was only about his recognition in the first half being different. They did seem to make an adjustment finally in half number two. But, you can be susceptible to it if you're only viewing it as hustling for the sake of hustle. But there certainly needs to be a recognition that you're hustling within the framework of the defense called, within the framework of what your actual assignment is.
I'm a little worried when I see how they were falling for the banana in the tailpipe against the Giants and realizing that Minnesota is not going to do it with the run. They're going to use that boot action, and on the back end of it is Justin Jefferson running past you. That scares me when I look at this matchup with the Vikings.
With good reason. It should. And, you know, it's not like Dalvin Cook can't gash you
right,
just in a similar fashion to what Saquon Barkley can. I mean, aside from the Houston game, just run games in general have been really effective against the Bears up to this point in the season. And that's where the ineffectiveness of the defensive front, and we've talked about this scheme before, where it's one thing, you're not two gapping up front, but we see penetration. Like Justin Jones gets into the backfield, Angelo Blackson gets into the backfield, but are you just penetrating just sort of with an Ole move? Are you saying, yeah, I'm on the other side of the line of scrimmage, but are you doing it through the outside half of the man across from you? That's the thing. You still do need to occupy a blocking surface while you're working up the field. And that's what I don't believe the Bears defensive front is doing an effective enough job at, because you might see somebody get skinny and turn their shoulders into the gap while opening a crater in the run lane there. And that presents a huge issue for the linebacker trying to step forward and make a one-on-one play in the hole with Saquon Barkley. It's one thing if that hole is 8 inches wide. It's another thing if that hole is 8 feet wide. And that's where that big a difference, that gap, that alley that can be there for some of these opposing run games creates a really big issue for the linebackers and for the secondary. And then when you're talking about the boot action, yeah, Kirk Cousins isn't a guy who I don't expect him to deploy kind of the Daniel Jones method, if we'll call it that, and just take off for touchdown runs. But he's more than mobile enough to be able to get to the exterior of this Bears defense and be able to hit chunk plays down the field, or frankly just to at times if he decides to be able to move the chains. And you know, for the defense, that'll be something they need to shore up. They have to shore up the interior of that run defense, and then the second and third level won't be as likely, won't feel as pressed. Their eye discipline won't be tested in the same way if you feel like the front seven has that taken care of, and now we can be in a position to sort of play our assignments, to do our jobs without overreacting to it. I do. There is something. I was talking to Mully and Manley about this on the pregame show yesterday. I'm curious for you guys' thoughts on that. Because to me, back to the quarterback, I think the evaluation of Justin Fields in this town right now, I feel like the four seasons of the frustration from the lack of development from Mitchell Trubisky, I think so much of the Fields reaction just over a season into his Bears career, I believe that Trubisky shrapnel is a part of what seems to me to be people who are out on Justin Fields far quicker than people really got out on Mitch Trubisky. And it's almost like people are looking at Justin Fields like he's in his sixth year as a Bears quarterback, because the last first-round guy was here for four, and now here's the second year, this first-round guy. Now folks are like, it's out. We've been looking at this for too long. Like the callers I got on the post-post show last night, a bunch of them were like, I've been looking at this for too long, man. I can't believe this guy hasn't developed yet.
I think there's two things.
It's a different guy.
There's two things that are going on here. One, the point that you make, and I would add to it that because there was a little bit of a taste of winning, people jumped ahead and they thought, oh, well, the thing that they've got a disciplined defense and a coach that understands how to stay in games and try and win them late. People jumped ahead to, well, the thing is that they're missing is the quarterback. If they just had a competent quarterback that was going to make some of these open throws, then you're really cooking with something. That's why I thought for at least the fan base, and we already had one caller speak to this today, yesterday was important. Because it was the reality check that they needed. That's
how I started.
I see where you're going with that now.
That big ant, you see that the rest of this is bad.
To me, it felt so obvious still the whole time. But I see what you're saying now, where some folks kind of started letting their heads get a little big with dreaming Bears dreams for the 2022 season.
There were a lot of well maybes. There are a lot of, hey, that's a funny league, and yeah, well, every year there's a team that's ahead of schedule. Like they're not at the level talent-wise to be ready to dream those dreams, I don't think, despite that encouraging first game. It's now, we had a texter that alerted us to something when we were discussing the Justin Fields defiant response to Jason Leisure's question about the passing game not working. And he said, well, who says the passing game's not working? Mm. And I raised my eyebrows like, you know, it's really kind of historically bad and by far the worst in the NFL. And a texter said that you didn't have a problem with Fields' response.
Not at all. No, I did not. Because it really just comes down to whether or not you're comfortable with people putting words in your mouth. Like, I mean, we all love Jason Leisure. I think he asked some of the most pointed questions in the room, and it's what makes him great at his job. Conversely, I don't have any issue with Justin Fields not wanting Jason Leisure putting words in his mouth. So if Jason, if the reporter, if whomever in the room says, well, Justin, how come the passing game isn't working? Well, I didn't say that, reporter guy. You did. And then, you know, 2 weeks from now, if it's, all right, you went 11 out of 15 for 150 yards and no touchdowns, but you guys won, is the passing game working? That's not what, you know, if I'm Justin Fields, if I'm Matt Eberflus or whomever, whoever's like at that dais who it gets uncomfortable with words being spoken for them, essentially, you don't want that to now be a precedent that gets set where you've now said, you've now basically agreed to a statement being made on your behalf where, okay, you said the passing game wasn't working then. It's still not working now, right, Justin? Now you kind of get held to that, and that's what effective media ends up doing, and that's why, whether you're Justin Fields or Matt Eberflus or Ryan Poles or whatever, whoever's in that position, you don't want someone speaking words on your behalf. So I don't necessarily take that as Justin Fields saying that, yes, it is working. I just take that as, you're using words for me.
But when it was clarified, when he asked for who's saying it, and Jason offered him the statistics are saying it, then we had Fields not really then acting as if the statistics don't tell the story. And in this case, I think that there are going to be opportunities for the statistics to not match up with what are failures or successes. But in this case, they match up perfectly with the idea that the passing game isn't working. That's where, to me, it was like, you're not being self-aware publicly. And he
doesn't need to be self-aware publicly. He doesn't need, like last week, he said he played like trash.
Right.
Yesterday, he didn't play like trash. Obviously, the passing game is still the worst in football, though. But I don't expect Justin Fields or Matt Eberflus or Luke Getsy to come to the podium every week and talk about how awful they are. Because that's not a realistic way to continue to pursue success internally. Now, internally, they're obvious. They know they're bad, and they know they need to get better, and they know they're going to continue to work at that. But I don't expect any of those guys who go to the podium and address the media to just continually talk about whether it's after a game, whether it's during the week of practice, and just admit that, yes, we're awful. Yes, we're trash. That is a self-defeating way to go about it, certainly publicly and verbally. So I didn't even necessarily take it as a defensive response. I just took it as Justin Fields wanting to not have someone else's words define his perception of where things are at, because the statistical results within that can vary in what is actually being seen as success or not. So I think he didn't want to admit to what Jason was kind of, in a way, sort of putting in his mouth, and two, not wanting just the stats themselves to be seen as something that defines their success.
Right. I agree with you that there are going to be times like that, but when the statistical analysis of it is so overwhelming, it seems very disingenuous to then immediately throw those statistics away to try and say that everything's fine. That's how, in listening to it, what I thought was...
I didn't take it as him saying everything was fine.
Well,
he said it
doesn't matter if they win, and this was coming off a loss. So, like to me, you lose some of that benefit of the doubt when you... I feel like he threw something back at Jason and was not expecting the response that he got. And when he got that response, he was like, oh, well, those statistics don't matter. They do matter. They do matter because you're the worst passing offense in recent history in the NFL.
But then what is the threshold? And like, when is he allowed to say that the passing attack isn't working? What is he allowed to say?
He doesn't have to say that. He could say, now
it feels like we're assigning that to him.
We're not assigning that to him. They're assigning it to him with their play. Like, those statistics were not assigned to them. They gave those statistics
to them, though.
Right.
It's not as simple as that. He has to speak to them.
But he can say, yeah, you know what? The statistics are really bad. there are some things that we think we're getting better at, but obviously this is not what we want to do. We want to be better, and we will be better. That's and he's done that previously.
That would be a more drawn out and eloquent way to go about that exchange. But the exchange began with my interpretation. I ain't spoke to Justin. My interpretation, and likely how I would have sort of bristled a bit as well, is feeling like words were being put in his mouth, and initially just pushing back on that, like you're phrasing a question for me as opposed to posing a question to me, which again, I think
it's more simple.
That'll happen sometimes.
I think it's more simple. It's just the passing game's not working. It's fact. I mean, I think that's just stating fact that it's the worst passing game in the league.
It's stating a generally held opinion that most of us agree with. It's not a fact.
Yeah,
and for Justin Fields, he's not going to receive that as fact.
Do you think the passing game's working?
No, I don't think the passing game is working. The passing game is atrocious.
That's all he's saying.
But I'm not Justin Fields.
But we all agree.
I'm not the one who has to step to the podium or the dais or whatever you want to call it and address that to the media on behalf of myself and the Bears organization on a weekly basis. If I were in Justin Fields' shoes, or like, you know, when I was an executive with the Arena Football League and folks wanted to talk about TV ratings and, well, nobody wants to watch arena football. Well, actually, the thing about it is we need to get on bigger platforms. And so the ratings don't mean that no one cares about arena football, because actually we have passionate fans in this market and that market. Mm-hmm. And you get into some of the minutia of that, just in sort of defense of your position, because it's never just as cut and dry as something works or something doesn't work, strictly based off of the statistics. And especially where I think, you know, it's worthy of giving enough credit to Eberflus and Poles, to Justin Fields, in recognizing that they are not likely to become a statistically spectacular passing attack this season. So there may be never a point where Justin Fields can step to the podium this season and, based off of stats, say that the passing attack is working. That is a dangerous thing to just begin admitting to in week 4 of the season, and it's certainly, just as far as setting a precedent, is not something I think in that position you want to just allow the collective media or whomever put those words sort of in your mouth and just agree to them just based off of a stat. It oversimplifies.
If I hadn't seen him be able to make statements like I offered before, I wouldn't stay on this position. But it's not as if we haven't seen Justin Fields be eloquent. I do think that he is a little bit more rough around the edges after losses, as I think all of us are or would be. But we've seen him say, I need to be better, or we need to get better. And when confronted with the facts of what the football has been, he could have very easily just done that. And it did feel like that he felt like he was being tested. So he tried to test back. And then I didn't think it was a great moment for him.
I thought guys handled themselves completely fine. I didn't have any issue with Jason's question. I had zero issue with Justin's answer. I think it wasn't even that contentious of an exchange.
No, I don't think it was disagreeing
on the verbiage there.
Right.
And I didn't have any issue with Justin disagreeing with the verbiage. And did it get a little bit bristly? Maybe slightly, because he didn't want words being put in his mouth about how bad the offense was. Is the offense bad? Is the passing attack awful? Yes. I think we all see that. That doesn't mean Justin Fields needs to verbally admit to that on a weekly basis as he's working to improve.
I think my bar for words, if someone says, you said this, that's putting words in someone's mouth.
But after he agrees to that, that's what the next iterance will be. Once he agrees to the way Jason phrased it, the next time it's going to be, Justin, you agreed that the passing attack wasn't working. That's how that works, Dan. You know that.
I think that presupposes an agenda that I don't think.
Obviously.
But I don't think Jason Leisure has that agenda. I don't think
Jason Leisure has an agenda, but just anytime you're saying something at that microphone, there's the ability for that to be parsed and used later as something you have stated as fact.
Right.
Or
so
as
a lawyer would say, I won't stipulate to that assumption of fact.
I'm not surprised Justin Fields didn't phrase it that way.
That's what I'm saying. But
I've been on the stand as an expert witness with some lawyer trying to sue the Arena Football League, and I have had to spar in that manner.
Right.
I don't think Justin Fields has had to be in that position.
I understand what you're saying. That if we were looking at it from that perspective, you would say, "Well, I'm not going to necessarily accept your characterization."
I don't agree to that premise.
Right. However, here's what went right. Here's what went wrong. Here's what's going over here. No, so I get that.
And if they were sitting there talking, just him and Jason, for 20 minutes, he probably would have gone into all that detail.
He's at
the mic for a couple
working.
Of minutes after a game, being peppered with a few questions. And essentially, that was his version of, I don't agree with that premise.
All right. I get it. I get it. Even though we can all agree that the passing game sucks.
The passing game is terrible.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So we could be talking about different things. Anthony Herron.
It's really bad.
Thank you.
All right, fellas.
That's Big Ant Herron. We got to talk White Sox next.
No. And yes, do we?
Yeah, just for a little bit.
All right.
Because Tony La Russa is retiring this afternoon at a press conference.
After a very successful run as White Sox manager.
And Baghdad Bob Nightingale needs somebody to edit what he's doing. Because some of the stuff he said is insulting. Insulting.
I agree with you. I think that there's a lot of stuff that was foreshadowed and wasn't Monday morning quarterback.
Hell no.
By White Sox fans or White Sox observers. This is exactly what people feared would happen with the White Sox, and it happened. And now they've got to figure out how to fix it, and I'm not sure that they can. We'll discuss it next here on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I think they got the message. What is it to expect? Whoever's going to manage or whoever they're going to hire or whoever's going to be there, I know they're going to be expecting something a little different. It's going to be more people accountable for doing their job. And I think it's going to change. I think it's going to be a little different.
That's Miguel Cairo, who is very unlikely to be the manager. I'm told he is not going to be the manager of the White Sox next year. Maybe they'll interview him. Maybe his exit interview will function as an interview. I don't know exactly how that's going to work. But today at 4 o'clock, Tony La Russa is going to announce that he is done managing the White Sox. I told you on Tuesday. I told you on Tuesday. I came in here Wednesday morning and told you that. And, of course, now Bob Nightingale gets official word from his people at the White Sox that it's happening after a lot of people within the organization knew that last week. and some of the stuff from Nightingale. Just two lines here. Let me just get this out of the way, because when he writes, the White Sox will now be looking for their fourth manager in eight seasons. White Sox GM Rick Hahn originally wanted to hire A.J. Hinch instead of La Russa, but it would have made no difference. My ass! How dare you say it would have made no difference for anybody who has been around watching the last 2 years of baseball and what has happened to this team. I'm not saying it makes all the difference, but how dare you say it would make no difference? And then the lead to his story. It was one of baseball's greatest feel-good stories, with a Hall of Fame manager coming out of retirement to lead his old team to a World Series title. It was never a feel-good story. It was awful from jump, and everybody said it. It sucked. The idea sucked. The rationale sucked. What it did to the organization sucked. Sky Point Doug. It was bad from the start, and we called it, and we knew it, and everything that we thought might happen happened, and now it ends with this whimper this afternoon. Screw it all.
The idea that a different manager, like if let's take everything else out of it. Let's just talk about in-game strategy by Tony La Russa. The idea that A.J. Hinch or any qualified, Dan, we don't even have to look that far. We can look at Miguel Cairo and look at just the simple things that he did in that stretch of games where they played those 20 games that they played well in. What do you have? You have someone who doesn't feel beholden to putting Leury Garcia in the lineup. Like, come on. Like, no manager in the history of baseball was intentionally walking people with two strikes other than Tony La Russa. And he did it twice this year. So you can't tell me that that it would have made no difference to have any qualified manager managing the White Sox this year.
A statement like that should be edited out. A sports editor, somebody should just say, you can't say that. You just can't. It's wrong.
Well, I think that Bob is probably given a little leeway because he does a lot of business and breaks some stories. Although this story was broken on this radio show last Tuesday.
It was broken on Twitter Tuesday afternoon, like, from somebody sitting in a CVS parking lot.
Yes, like many other White Sox stories that have happened this year.
Yeah, like Tim Anderson's torn ligament in his hand.
Yeah, like that story, or what was actually going on with La Russa. You know, stuff like that. Anyway, the idea that it's offensive, quite honestly, to White Sox fans that were looking at this season and going, the manager is a big part of the problem. Now, what's going to happen over the next few days is there going to be people that will tell you that he wasn't, they'll try to globalize it. He wasn't the only problem. And they're correct.
That's right.
But he was one of the bigger problems that this team and this franchise had and has. And moving on from it is not going to be easy. Like we were talking about with the Bears, where Justin Fields has a better day and it opens up light into letting you see that there are other problems here. The same can be said for La Russa. La Russa and the way that he managed the White Sox allow for all of us to go back and go, hey, this is not working on a lot of different levels. But don't be fooled. He was not the right person for the job, and he didn't do the job well. And those are things that are fair to say about him, partially because this isn't looking back. This isn't, and I'm sure that Rick will probably throw some line about there about hindsight or something. This was first guess stuff. This is when Bob floated his name 2 years ago. People were like, that doesn't make any sense for this team at this point in where they think that they are.
Can I have one more Bob Nightingale?
Sure.
From the piece. This is from the article, the same article that Dan was reading. Here's the quote. La Russa's two-year stint will be wildly considered a failure, but really, that's unfair. He led the White Sox to a 93-69 record in his first year back in 2021, losing to the Houston Astros in the first round. It led to surreal expectations this season. Anything less than a World Series title would be considered a failure. Close quote. Excuse me?
What's wrong with those expectations?
World Series expectations? That's surreal?
No. That's what you were building toward. That is,
you were coming off a season where you won a division championship and you spent the most money that your team has ever spent on a roster. So how is it that those expectations were surreal?
The point was to win a World Series, and they told us that La Russa will help get them there.
That is correct, Mike Rankin.
Yep.
That the hiring of La Russa lets you know that the standard was World Series and not some sort of like developmental thing. The whole point was, we have a team that's close, and the manager that got them raised up is fine, but we are looking for bigger things. So we're going to fire Rick Renteria, which most White Sox fans are like, okay, I get it. Who are you going to get? And then there were a bunch of people, including some of the names that are going to pop up now, like Bruce Bochy, which would have made more sense for the White Sox to do back then. When La Russa pops into the picture, people are like, no, that doesn't make it. It only made sense to one person.
To this day. To this day, that's true.
It only made sense to the owner of the White Sox. And I was talking with a friend of mine who's a White Sox fan last night, and they were like, the amount of doom that they feel about all of this. And I think that it's fair, because is anything else going to change? I do think that you get a lift from hiring someone who is actually paid attention and knew the rules to today's game. You get a boost from that. But if other stuff isn't fixed for the White Sox, you're not going to be able to get to your goals. So there's a lot that has to be accounted for. The amount of money is going to be a figure that will be thrown in your face by the general manager this afternoon. How did you spend that money, though? You spent it on hurt players that were using their time with this franchise as rehab stints. You spent it on players that were towards the end of their career in some cases. You spent the money on a 26th man and gave that guy a 3-year deal when you weren't bidding against anyone else. All of that stuff has to be thrown into question for the White Sox organizationally.
There's something else that I want to say regarding what we may or may not learn from today's news conference. And without being able to reveal too much, what I heard last week was, and when I talked to people close to this situation, the way people were talking about La Russa and his ongoing health issues was serious.
Very.
There was some gravity to it. And I don't know what La Russa is going to share today. I don't know what there is entirely to be shared based on what the team wants out there and what La Russa himself.
I would imagine that he doesn't share a lot because
wants out there.
Like, because when he's done with this, he's going to walk away and that's going to be that.
Right. I just, from the level of concern that I heard from people, that the things that we heard about the pacemaker and we heard about stuff where his doctor said this and that. I don't know what's going to come out today, but I also think that we should be mindful that these health concerns are real.
Yes, that this is the schmoz.
This is not that. I want to keep saying that. That this isn't just a way that they're like, well, let's get out from under it. Let's claim it's this, and it got his pacemaker adjusted, and that's that. That I was that people who I know and have known for a long time, discussed this in a way that made it seem like they're very concerned for someone they care about.
Yes, and it played out throughout the season, Dan, where he clearly kind of wanted to come back, but the doctors have all said you. No, like this is too stressful for you in the condition that you're in. Let me pose a question to you. Would it be worth it to you, Mike Rankin? You can jump in on this too because you are Mr. Future Sox and Mr. White Sox. Well, you're not Mr. White Sox because you're not Minnie. But would you be, how would you feel if I offered up the idea of trading something for AJ Hinch?
Let's talk about that in just a second. It is a Horizon Therapeutics Bears Monday, but it's going to be a big White Sox afternoon. So taking a little bit of time to detour into some White Sox stuff. Dan Wiederer at the top of the hour says he's rewatched the Bears film. Oy, we'll see if he's okay. And don't forget, it's cereal day. I have in my hand actual BoJack cereal. We've got bowls. We've got milk. We've got spoons. And we've got the Jacks. So we're going to get that all ready to go later in the show. We'll pay off the bet on the score.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Got a proposal for us?
Yeah, I'm just, along with other things, would you two be okay with the White Sox exploring trading draft capital for AJ Hinch?
I'd rather look at some other candidates first. I mean, I think there's some Joe Espada and Carlos Beltran, as long as it's somebody completely outside the current organization.
Mike Rankin?
Lawrence, I understand why you posed the question, or at least to me, because AJ Hinch was the initial choice. I mean,
right.
his name was on the graphic for the release, but you know, it's Tony La Russa, but over the last 2 seasons plus, this roster has changed. So I'm not feeling the same type of way about AJ Hinch as I did when he was getting set to potentially be hired for the White Sox. So I would pass
okay.
on trading any value for a manager, because I think in the position the White Sox are in right now, they're able to find somebody who should be able to fit into this culture.
What I would like is for them to hire someone who wants to manage the White Sox. That's a step in the right direction, because 2 of the last 3 managers have not wanted to manage the White Sox.
It's been a tradition, unlike any other.
It really is.
The reluctant manager. Remember when Paul Konerko didn't want to be captain?
Yeah, but that was more of a selfless thing. This is, we're offering you a job, 1 of 32.
Yeah, I don't think 30.
And I don't know, Charlie. I got another guy on the line
about some white walls. Yeah. And Robin Ventura's like, I kind of don't want to do it. But what if we gave you more money?
Oh, I don't know.
I kind of still don't want to do it. But loyalty, fine. I'll do it.
Didn't Jerry Manuel kind of push back on it, too? Didn't he not want to be the manager? I gotta remember. I thought I read something like that.
No one wants to be the manager, except for like Ozzy wants to be manager. Ozzy made his case yesterday. He was talking about no one understands this team better. Look,
what's Manny Acta doing these days? I'll never forget the speech that he gave when he knew he was going to get fired. Like, well, you're going to get another job. He said, I'm not necessarily going to get another job. He's like, I'm Manny Acta. He's like, who do you think I am here?
Right.
It was great.
It's Mike Quatty.
Right. Well, hey. Quatty.
I just would like the next manager of the White Sox, I don't want him to have to be convinced to be the manager of the White Sox.
Just not somebody with current or former ties to the organization.
I'm okay with it as long as you do a process that allows you to see. Like, I honestly do believe that they should interview Ozzy. And the reason that I think that they should interview Ozzy is they should know what Ozzy knows. And maybe they already do, but I would want to know what he knows.
Lawrence, quickly, they should interview as many candidates as they can, 100%. Including Ozzy and AJ. But don't
free looks.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't free necessarily looks. Consider it serious, but talk to them.
And I think in Ozzy's case, there could be some hard truths about your organization that you might be able to learn. And maybe you can then apply it to how you're going to fix some of this stuff.
That's Lawrence Holmes. I'm Dan Bernstein. Dan Wiederer has done the impossible, the improbable.
He's going to explain to us why Justin Fields thinks, here, this is me putting words in his mouth, why Justin Fields thinks that the passing game is just fine.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.